Amateur Traveler Podcast, episode 51. This week, the Amateur Traveler Podcast goes to Tanzania. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Welcome to this, the first show of the second season of the Amateur Traveler Podcast. If you couldn't tell from the opening music piece that I chose for this particular episode, Toto, we're not in Kansas anymore. My plan is to make this the first of at least two shows on Tanzania. This particular show will focus on seeing Tanzania as a tourist, and the next show will focus on seeing Tanzania as a guest, more about the people, more about some of the issues they're facing in Tanzania. And that will be a little different than most people get to see in Tanzania because of the nature of the trip that I just got back from. This show, as the next show, will both include sound scene clips, if you couldn't tell already. And I'll also be doing some video shows of the same trip because I took hours of video and recorded hours of audio. I usually do a news section of the show here, but I'm going to skip over the news section because I have a lot of content that I want to fit into the show and I don't want to get too long. So I just got back from a two-week trip to Tanzania. And as I mentioned in previous shows, this is a trip where I went with nine other people. It's a group from my church, and we spent the first three or four days, really 3 days, being a tourist. And we went on a three-day safari trip with the Land Rovers and the guides and such. And then the rest of the trip we spent meeting some of the people, going to some churches and hospitals and schools and such. And that we'll talk about next week. And this week I'm going to focus really on those first 3 days because it's more of a typical tourist experience in Tanzania. So we flew from San Francisco to London, and then from London to Nairobi in Kenya, and from Nairobi to Tanzania. So the first thing you need to know about getting to Tanzania is it's going to take a while, especially if you're any place in the States and on the far western side of the States like I am. We spent basically about 21 hours in the air, plus another 7.5 hours in layover in London, and another couple hours of layover in Nairobi. I've started to put up my trip journal on my personal website, chris2x.com, and I'll put links to that in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. And I kept a trip journal that'll go into a lot of the details that I won't try and cover on this part of the show, in terms of the logistics, some of the people that I went with, what we saw, some of the funny things that happened to us. So I'll refer you to that. The other thing you should know is if you are flying through London and you have a 7.5 hour layover, it is possible to get out of the airport and go do something more fun. What we did is we actually grabbed a bus from the central bus station there at Heathrow. It's about 45 minutes to Windsor Castle. And so we went over to Windsor and did some sightseeing and spent some time there, which was a nice break from this 7.5 hour layover. And we had booked our luggage all the way through. We had thought we'd booked it as far as we could. Some people had booked it all the way through to the Kilimanjaro airport, which is where we flew into. Others, like me, had booked it only as far as Nairobi, and we had to go get it in Nairobi and try and bring it to the desk of Precision Air. All of us who did that, the luggage did not make it all the way to Kilimanjaro until the next day, but that's another story, and you can read about that in the travel journal. So once you finally get to Tanzania, and you're just completely exhausted usually by that point because you've just done two night flights in a row to get there, at least if you come as far as we did, two night flights in a row to get there. And the first thing that strikes you as you're leaving the airport is you're way out in the middle of nowhere because the Kilimanjaro airport is between the two largest towns in northern Tanzania. It's between Arusha and Moshi. Moshi is the base for people who are going to climb Kilimanjaro, and a lot of the outfitting agent groups go out of Moshi. It's about 200,000 people. And then Arusha, which is also the center for some of the United Nations activity in East Africa, it's where the Rwanda genocide trials are happening, for instance. Arusha is about 350,000 people just in the city itself, and probably 1 million, we were told, if you include everybody who lives in the surrounding area. Arusha tends to be the center for especially trips to the four large national parks, or actually five large national parks in the area, and the five parks are the Arusha National Park, which we did not get to on this trip, the Serengeti Park, which also we didn't get to, but there's a previous episode of The Amateur Traveler which talks about going on safari to the Serengeti National Park. And then the other three parks that we did get to are Lake Manyara, Ngorongoro Crater, and Tarangire, and that's what we'll be talking about on this particular show. When you first get off the airport, the first thing that you notice is you're kind of in the middle of nowhere, that you're not right near the town, you're in between these two towns, but there are people everywhere, and there are people on foot. Tanzania is not a wealthy country, and so most people are getting by on foot or on bicycle. You see the women carrying things on their head. You see people carrying firewood and charcoal and farm goods and fodder for the animals and all sorts of things just for miles and miles. It's quite noticeable as you're going in. And you go in, and as you head towards Arusha, it gets more and more lush. So you start out in this grazing land. At least see a lot of Maasai, and we'll talk a lot more about Maasai here as I go along, who are a pastoral tribe, not originally from Tanzania, but have come down years ago, many, many years ago, from Ethiopia region, and they tend to be cattle herders. And then as you head to Arusha, you start seeing, it starts to get, especially this time of year, more and more lush. Banana trees and corn, and just looks like something is growing in every square inch by the time you get to Arusha, which is at about 4,000 feet, as I recall. So, and then you get out of the bus at Arusha, and this is sort of the typical tourist experience. We got out to change money, and the next thing you notice is you start interacting with people who are not the bus driver who picked you up, and you run into the people who want to sell you something. And you stand out a bit in Tanzania. You are a Mzungu. You are a white guy. if you happen to be the same shade as I am, you are one of the Wazungu, the white people. And if you are a white person in downtown Arusha, near where the tourists hang out, and we'll talk about other places to hang out later on, but you know, you're near the money changing, you're near the tourist hotels, then you will get this experience where somebody wants to sell you batik, somebody wants to sell you carving, somebody wants to sell you beads, and they get really close to you, and they're fairly persistent, and they're willing to bargain. There's a lot of bargaining going on here, but it's a little overwhelming when you just got off the plane. And there are pictures of us at this first meal before we got to the hotel, just almost passed out on the table, several of us asleep here. So dealing with the bartering people first off was a little overwhelming. But we get to the hotel, we get some sleep. By dinner time, we're actually in reasonable shape. Next morning, we get up. Our luggage did show up, fortunately. And we head off for these national parks. And the first one we went to is Lake Manyara. And here's a little clip from our particular guide, Bashiri, about Lake Manyara.
The fence for the cows.
Right.
You know, they don't have a house for the cows.
Right.
Just put that tree, because it's a thorn tree. The thorn tree.
Did you guys hear that? We're going to Manyara, Lake Manyara, and it's, in the Maasai language, it's Imanyara, and it's the acacia tree. And the Maasai would use, because it has thorns on it, like 2-inch, pretty long thorns, they would use it like natural barbed wire for the keeping the, making a pen for the cows.
So when you get to the park, you're driving in Land Rovers, and we were a group of 10, and basically 10 people fits very well in 2 Land Rovers. And you get to the park, and the top of the Land Rover actually opens up. They've modified these Land Rovers so that you can stand up in the back. And so we're standing up in the back in Lake Manyara, and we're looking at elephants, and we're looking at baboons, and giraffe, and monkeys, and all sorts of things. And your mind is going, wow, this is really cool. This is almost like being in Africa, because I found my mind was just rejecting the possibility that this was really Africa. But one of the things that was interesting, and it's a relatively small park, and so you're fairly close to these animals, and you're standing there up in the Land Rover taking pictures as about 15-20 elephants are walking right across the road, and it I was reminded of my mother saying on more than one occasion that we sounded like a herd of elephants. And the interesting thing is, I think my mother was wrong, because a herd of elephants makes almost no noise. I'm going to play you a clip of our herd of elephants walking across the road right in front of us. And the thing you'll notice is you don't hear the elephants. So it's kind of bizarre that way as a sound seeing tour, and you'll probably enjoy the video better when I get that up. But our guide Bashiri explains that the bottom of an elephant's foot is very padded, and therefore it doesn't make a lot of noise. So listen to Bashiri explain it.
So when you step like this, you never hear the vibration.
Oh, you don't hear the vibration.
Yes, you don't hear the vibration. You just 20 elephants can pass here, and then in the morning you say, oh, the elephant passing here. He says, yeah.
So
maybe you can hear the breathing.
Walk
the breathing.
Elephant carry a big stick.
We know when you're done.
Oh. Oh. Done.
Okay. I didn't want to stand up in the middle of your picture.
Elephant's coming right at us. Might want to stop. They altered their course.
See traffic jams like that in New Jersey.
The second day of our safari, we went to Ngorongoro Crater. Ngorongoro is a Maasai word which means cowbell, because Ngorongoro Crater is not actually a crater, but a caldera of an ancient volcano. It's 15 to 20 kilometers across, depending on where you slice it. And on the way up to Ngorongoro, we stopped at a Maasai boma. And as Bashiri explains, the Maasai are allowed to live within the park.
So Maasai, they're still living traditionally. That's why even they are using something. Even we like them, because it's the only tribe they are using their tradition.
What?
But now, because of interference, some other things they are using to change small, but it's very small.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, very, very small. Even their food is still, they are using their own food, meat and blood, drinking the blood, fresh blood from the cow.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
From the live cow.
Yeah.
I remember that now.
Maasai?
Yeah.
And in Ngorongoro, that's why even Ngorongoro is it's not a park, it's just, we say, it's conservation area, because Maasai and animals, they are allowed to live there.
Ah, okay.
But no one interfering with each other.
Interesting.
Yeah. But no, they are not allowed to do anything, rather than keeping just the cows and staying there. No other activities.
Okay.
Yeah.
They can't build buildings or whatever.
Yes, they have their own building.
Okay.
They call it village, one village. One village can have more than 200 people inside.
So because the Maasai don't believe in hunting the wild animals, they believe the cows were given to them to live off of, including drinking the blood of cows, which was mentioned in the previous clip, they're allowed to live, or at least to herd, within the Ngorongoro Crater. But there are some catches, and as Bashiri explains.
As we say, it's a multiple land use. Because Maasai and animals, they are allowed to live there. But animals have got more right than Maasai.
Yeah?
If the Maasai kill the lion, he go to the court.
Okay.
And maybe you go to the jail. But if the lion kill the Maasai, it's fine.
He doesn't go to court.
Yeah. Yeah. But themselves, they know how to defend themselves. Because they are there since. You see, they are indigenous.
And on the way into the crater, we stopped at a cultural boma and got a chance to meet with some of the Maasai. You pay an entrance fee to get in, so it is a real place where people are living, but it is a tourist experience still nonetheless. And the song that opened up the show was the song that they greeted us with. And then here's a clip of getting a chance to go inside of one of the huts, which is made of sticks and cow dung, and talk to a member of the tribe.
Hi, man.
Hey.
You're welcome.
You sit.
How about if I sit here and you want to sit there?
Okay.
You go ahead.
Which would be easier for you?
Alright.
You come sit here.
Ah, okay.
Okay.
I'm going to sit here. But I'll move my feet. And this is your wife?
This is my wife.
Uh-huh. And your name? Her name.
My name is Yankik.
Esenkik. You can hear better than I hear. Esenkik, and that is your name?
Me?
Yeah.
Esenkik.
This is my name, Esenkik.
Esenkik.
Yeah. Ah.
What is your name?
My name is Carol.
Carol.
Mm-hmm.
You?
Chinalako Chris.
Chinalako Chris. And you?
Jack.
Jackie.
It's very cozy.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's nice and warm.
There's some people. Yes.
Hello. So where do you sleep?
Okay, this You okay? How are you?
Well, thank you.
Okay, this house is Maasai. House is Maasai.
Maasai.
Yeah, Maasai houses.
Maasai houses. Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay, I have small window.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You come light inside.
Mm-hmm.
You smoke outside.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
This is a catch a fire. Fire to make inside, not to make outside.
Yes. To make cold. Inside warm.
Yeah, I'm very cold here to make fire inside.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, to have 2 rooms sleeping.
Uh-huh. Back
this,
here?
Yeah, this is the medicine, your mother mm-hmm. and the father.
Okay.
This is for your kid, for your children sleeping here.
Okay, you and then see? Back here for the animals?
To keep small baby cows.
Ah, and this
baby cows living okay. inside.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
For protection.
Yeah. One family. One family living in your
one family.
Yeah, 4 people. But you have 2 children, 4 people. 3 uh-huh. children, 5 people.
Yes.
Okay.
How many wives do you have?
I have 2 wives.
2 wives. Yeah. So she has another
Another houses.
Mm. Another house like this.
Yeah, but you have 3 wives, 3 houses.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is a kitchen fire to make food to eat.
Mm-hmm.
To make some porridge.
Mm-hmm.
And milk from cows. And the meat from cows and the blood from cows to take for your neck.
Mm-hmm.
And that thing.
The porridge you make from what?
I to go to buy for your shopping. I to go to buy Arusha.
Arusha, you buy it in Arusha?
Mm-hmm.
Already prepared.
Sorry?
The corn meal.
Is it corn or what kind of porridge?
Porridge that go to buy.
Yes.
Like
mm-hmm.
like oatmeal or
mm-hmm.
uh-huh, so you bring oatmeal?
Yeah,
maize meal.
Yeah.
I'm sure maize. Yeah.
But
and you cook it on here.
Sorry?
You cook here.
And here inside. Mm-hmm. No, not to make outside.
Not outside.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Probably not very cold here. To make fire inside.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Eat some bamboo. Stuff uh-huh. like this.
This one is bamboo.
You have uh-huh. to cut for a big mountain
uh-huh.
and then to come to build for your houses.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
For you, have you left the village to go to school?
Yeah, I go to school.
You go to school now?
Mm-hmm.
In Arusha?
In Arusha. Uh-huh.
And what level of school are you?
Me?
Uh-huh.
Me, I go to school speaking 3 languages.
Oh, okay.
Maasai language,
mm-hmm.
and Swahili language,
Swahili,
and a little bit English.
And English,
yeah, a little bit.
Kidogo.
Kidogo. Kidogo English.
So you go to study language
mm-hmm.
in Arusha?
In Arusha.
How long do you go to study? Many weeks or?
1 week.
1 week?
1 year.
1 year, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you come back?
And then come back this village. Yeah, to have a kindergarten school here.
Mm-hmm.
To have a kindergarten for your small children, 5 years, 3 years,
mm-hmm.
to have here for this village.
So
after you, after graduation, you school for your children.
So you will teach the children?
Yeah, to have teacher, women. Women teach.
Women teach.
Ah, the women teach the children.
You can take a photo inside.
Sure. Yeah. If you don't mind. Two things to point out with that clip. One is that we were actually very glad to be inside. This was the one day that was pretty chilly. We were there in July, as I said, just got back from there. And I actually didn't bring a sweatshirt, and I didn't really need one the whole time except for this 1 hour here where we were at the Boma, because they're in kind of a windswept area between Ngorongoro and the Serengeti Plain. This is as close as we got to Serengeti. Serengeti, which means endless plain in Maasai. And it's kind of a windswept area, and it was chilly, and it was nice to go inside this hut. It's fairly small, maybe 10 feet around, and hemispherical, and it did retain the heat fairly well. And so as we come in, you may have heard that comment. The other thing to notice is that as a tourist, and this particular show is talking about being a tourist, you can get by fine in English because the people you're coming into contact with, even in the Maasai village, have learned enough English to be able to communicate. Now, next episode, I'll talk more about Swahili and when that came in handy, because you heard me speaking some Swahili in this particular episode, like kidogo, which means a little. He speaks a little English, is what he told us. And after this, we went, first there was opportunity for shopping, because there's always opportunity for shopping when you're in one of these tourist sort of venues, even though it was a real boma, and in the center was a corral for the cattle. There's always a chance to shop. But we went then down into the crater, and this is when I first felt that I was on the plains of Africa, because it's 16 to 20 kilometers across, and just a line of wildebeest, for instance, going on for miles. So, you know, we're just not in a little game park anymore. This is Africa. And as we come down, the Maasai do have their cattle in there. They're allowed to have their cattle during the day, but they have to take it out by 6 o'clock at night, and so they will occasionally drive the cattle down to the salt flats or to the water down in Ngorongoro. And it's interesting to note, as you come in, you see wildebeests and zebras, and there's just so many of them, and they're so majestic, and it's so great to see them. And by the end of the day, you're going, yeah, there's another zebra, just drive on, we don't need to stop and take a picture. So it's just amazing how many animals there are, and just how jaded you get from because of that. And the flamingos that we saw, and we saw warthogs. And I'll have a clip later on when I do a video version of this about, we were watching a cheetah at one point, and I think it was actually a mother cheetah, we believe it was pregnant, that scared up a rabbit. And as it scared up a rabbit, it then chased it down. It was a real, either a Discovery Channel moment or a Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom, depending on your age. And I'll put a clip to that, or put that up in the video version of the show, which will come out later on. We also got a chance to see hippos in a hippo pool, which is just fascinating to watch. Let me see if I can include a little of that sound of the hippos here.
They really like each other, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
Oh my god, it's huge. Look at that. How big that is. Oh, baby! Look at the baby! Where?
You can hear in that clip how windy it was in there. And one thing I would advise you is that don't spend a lot of time on whatever your hairdo is going to be that day, and that you go into Ngorongoro Crater, and wear a dust-colored shirt. Now, you don't really have to, because at the end of the day, you'll be wearing a dust-colored shirt anyway. But as you're standing up, and I just wanted to stand the whole time and just watch for game and just look around and just enjoy being in Africa. But my hair was a fright, I'm sure, and my shirt, like everyone else's, was covered with dust and ring around the collar with dust. And it's a dusty ride as you're going through there, and a very bumpy ride. And so some people prefer to just sit down and not try to do the Land Rover surfing. We did also see a black rhino, We only saw one. There are reported to be somewhere less than 20. I've heard ranges, numbers ranging from 14 to 17 black rhinos total in Ngorongoro. They're very endangered. And it was a little bit at a distance, but still amazing to see such a preposterously armored animal. Very interesting to watch. Not sure I'd want to be a whole lot closer to a rhino. And then after lunch, we still hadn't seen lions, and we were somewhat dissatisfied with that. At this point, we're ignoring the zebras and the wildebeests, as I said, and even the hyenas and the jackal and the warthogs and the impalas and the dikdiks and all of that, and looking for lions. And then we drove into an African traffic jam again, and this time there were 10 lions, a pride of lions, 9 lionesses, and 1 young male that decided to sun themselves, half of them just sunning themselves in the road. And one risk in driving in Africa, especially where all of the rights go to the animals, is that if you're in a Range Rover or a Land Rover and a lion decides to cuddle up next to you and to wrap its arms around or its paws around your tire, then you stay there until the lion decides to go away. You can try turning on the engine and seeing if it will startle and leave, but we ran into one Range Rover where they'd been stuck there for 45 minutes, and we're sort of in need of finding facilities by this point, but there was a young male lion that was just very contentedly hanging on to their tire. So, and you're getting really close to these lions. Once while I was leaning out over the top, I got somehow a little too much in the face of one of these lionesses, and she gave me a bit of a growl that got me quickly back inside of the Range Rover. These are not tame animals, and it's still fascinating to see them. Here's a little about how hard it is to be a lion from Bashiri, our guide.
It's using energy.
Just a lot of energy.
Yes, you know, it's hunting and somebody running to him always. Even the animals, the antelope, if they smell the lion, they can't stay there. They run far away. Mm-hmm. So lion, he uses it, sometimes he lose.
Yes.
You see, sometimes he lose. So even to take the food for their cubs, He didn't get it. He do not get it. So always he can give birth a lot of cubs, but the lifespan is shorted because of the food.
Okay. What is the lifespan?
A lion in the wilderness is almost 25 up to 30 in the wilderness. Mm-hmm. But out of the wilderness can live longer.
Oh, okay.
Because he can go to somebody's house, Maasai house, and take the cow easily from the fence, you know. Mm-hmm. You can find the dead body of anything, mm-hmm, of the Maasai, because even the Maasai, they are not buried.
Oh.
Yes, there was not a, traditionally, they are not buried. If somebody passed away, they just leave the body and then go to other and starting the other settlement over there. You know? Yeah, so the lion can feed on that. So in the wilderness, lion getting a problem, getting some kicks from the buffalo and so forth. Huh. You know, if somebody come and beat you and do, you can't stay like this waiting until you. So you should have to fight sometimes. And so lion sometimes get some problem. I found one day the lion bleeding everywhere.
Oh.
Yes, because he go and attack the buffalo. Uh-oh. Then he lose the target. You know, lion, what he know, he just come direct to the to the throat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So sometimes he use and make a mistake maybe. And, mm-hmm. Oh, so it's
bad.
Wonderful. It's very bad.
Bad mistake.
So the buffalo take him to the bush and trying to shoot him.
Gore him.
Yeah. So it's a, and if you are weak, and if lion is weak, he never is dead. Because to get food, you need to be strong.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay?
Okay.
Uh-huh. We stayed that night for a second night in Kudu at the Kudu Lodge, and I'll put links to that in the show notes. Certainly would recommend it. It's a beautiful place. We had stayed in Arusha, I didn't mention it, at the Equator Hotel, which is a medium-priced hotel. Worked out just fine. It certainly would have no trouble recommending it, but certainly not high-end nor low-end. And then on the third day, we went to Tarangire, and Tarangire is yet another national park, and it is known particularly for elephants, although we didn't see quite as many on that day. What we saw were herds of zebra and wildebeest again. We saw a kill that a leopard had dragged into a tree a few weeks back. There was just kind of pieces of it left there, but didn't see any leopards. This would have been our best chance to see leopards there. Saw more giraffe. Certainly enjoyed that, and enjoyed the Tarangire Safari Lodge, which has this beautiful view of the river valley from the veranda. And we talked to friends just today who had stayed there 2 weeks ago on a different trip, not with us, and had particularly enjoyed it. It was a little more rustic than some of the other places that they had stayed, but the view from there is just particularly spectacular if you're staying at the lodge. We saw mongooses, what is the plural of mongoose, that had set up residence in a old termite mound. I didn't mention termite mounds, but you do see them all over the place in this part of Africa, and they're maybe 6 feet tall that have been created by these former termite nests. And we also saw a water buck, a spectacular animal, and apparently the water buck will, if it believes it's about to be killed and by a lion or something like that, will actually poison its own meat so that the lion won't want to eat it. So that's an interesting adaptation. We saw ostriches, we saw hornbills, and other very pretty birds. We saw blue monkeys, which are not actually blue, but that is what they call them. We also saw, in addition to the acacia trees, which are everywhere in this part of Africa, the baobab trees, which they call the upside-down trees, which I don't think I'd mentioned yet. Just a really another beautiful day, just another amazing day, just riding up, getting your hair messed up, standing up in the Land Cruiser, I guess we were technically in a Range Rover, I keep calling it a Land Rover. It was wonderful, it was spectacular, it was magnificent. All 3 days, really, although probably my favorite of the three parks that we went to, the three areas we went to, was the Ngorongoro Crater and the Boma that we saw there. And just a truly wonderful experience. But, and I told you this story so I could tell you the next one, with all the great things we saw and all the great experiences on this part of the trip, it's not my favorite part of the trip. That's actually the part that I'm going to talk about next week. So stay tuned and hear more about being in Africa, not as a tourist, but as an umgeni, or a guest or a stranger, the same word in Swahili. And we'll talk about that next week. Some new things in the 3 weeks since I last recorded a show. I have a new site up or new page up at the Blueberry Network for podcasts. I'll put links to that in show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I also have a page coming up on the new Podshow site. I haven't got as far with that yet. I had some email since the last show. Karen from Cape Cod, Massachusetts writes, I will be turning 40 in December, and my husband wants to take me on a trip to the location of my choice in December. I am more interested in history, so I thought I'm going to some places in Europe would be fantastic. I really only want to go for 7 days, and right now I'm so overwhelmed, as there are many great places and countries to go see. Any ideas, any good resources to help me narrow down my choice? I replied back to Karen, but if you have any ideas, you might post those in the discussion boards. Please comment also on this episode. Tell you what, I'll give you a little incentive to get to the discussion boards. I'm going to take that cheetah video, and it's going to show up on the discussion boards well before I get out a version of the Amateur Traveler podcast video edition. So a little incentive there to try and see if we can get a little more traffic on the discussion boards. I also had an email from Shannon about solo traveling. I really enjoy your podcast. My husband and I are serious travelers and have gotten many trip ideas from your show. I came across something the other day I thought was interesting, and I was curious if you knew anything about it. The company's called Adventure Bus. I came across this when I was looking for a solo trip. I get more vacation days than my husband's and plan to use them to do something outdoorsy, camping, hiking, horsebacking. I want to go off the beaten path. However, I don't feel fully comfortable backpacking in unfamiliar areas by myself. Do you have any suggestions for a way that a woman traveling alone can get a primitive, fairly unstructured experience safely without spending too much money? Cost of airfare isn't a problem since my husband works for a major airline. Very nice. I know you'll probably get tons of email, and so I did write back to Shannon and with some ideas. But if you have any other ideas, again, ideas on solo travel for Shannon, post those also on the discussion board. I did have one more email I wanted to share to you that I got from Meredith that made me laugh. And Meredith, I got this when I was in Arusha, Tanzania, so it is a small world after all. Meredith writes, "Hi, Chris. First, I just wanted to let you know how much I enjoy your podcast. I heard about it through Chris Marquardt's Tip from the Top Floor podcast. I subscribe to it through iTunes. I have been listening to the past episodes as well as new ones. I was listening to your Paris podcast and enjoyed your accurate pronunciation and sprinkling of French vocabulary in your show." Thank you. I try and be accurate. "When I was interrupted by the ringing of my telephone, I went to answer the phone and I had to stop myself from saying bonjour. Just a funny little story to let you know how much your podcast captured all my attention." Thanks very much, Meredith. That certainly gave me a laugh when I read that there in the middle of Africa. Meredith also sent along a URL for her travel photography, which I really enjoyed, so I'll put a link to that also in the show notes. Well, this show's gone on long enough, I think. I'd like to thank you all for listening, and I want to leave you with just a little taste of next week's show.
The best and the brightest served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Pod Show, and Limelight.